allow me to welcome Advocate Sean Abrahams, who, despite his national and international responsibilities, has been able to be with us here to give us the first quarter report. Without wasting time, I'm going to call on him to address this August committee.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable members of the committee, my colleagues from the National Prosecuting Authority, members of the media that are present here today, and ladies and gentlemen. Honourable Chairperson, allow me to very briefly introduce the members of my team. Closest to my left is Dr. Silas Ramahiti, a Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions and Head of Administration and Witness Protection. On his left is Advocate Simongile Nzinyati, who's an acting Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions and who heads the National Prosecuting Services. Next to him is Ms. Salome Baloyi, who's at Strategy and Risk in the institution. And next to her is Ms. Hanika van Zeld, who's the Head of Finance in the NPA. Behind me is Advocate Knox Molele, who heads the operations in the Asset Forfeiture Unit. Next to him is Advocate Marlene Govender, who heads the Specialist Commercial Crime Unit in my office. And then my spokesperson, Advocate Lebuyo Mufaku. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, we have the honour of presenting the National Prosecuting Authority's performance for the first quarter of the period 2017-2018. As I speak to the slides, Ms. Salome Baloyi will, of course, just direct it. I deem it necessary to, however, pass a few introductory remarks. As sub-program 4 of the Department of Justice, the NPA remains committed to the realization of the goals set by government through the National Development Plan and in giving effect to the long-term vision of the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Delivery Agreement by ensuring that all people in South Africa are safe and feel safe. In this regard, we provide a coordinated prosecuting service that ensures that justice is delivered to the victims of crime through general and specialized prosecutions, that profit is removed from crime, and that witnesses and related persons are protected. The four sub-programs of the NPA are the National Prosecuting Service, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, the Office for Witness Protection, and Support Services, which is administration. The NPA reported on 22 targets, of which 15 were achieved during the reporting period, indicative of a 68% achievement for the first quarter of 2017-18. The NPS, which is the National Prosecuting Services, reported on 12 targets, of which 9 were achieved. That is a 75% achievement over the reporting period. A conviction rate of 91% was achieved in the High Courts against a target of 87%. A conviction rate of 81% was achieved in the Regional Courts against a target of 74%. A conviction rate of 96% was achieved in the District Courts against a target of 88%. A conviction rate of 94% was achieved in complex commercial crime cases against a target of 93%. A conviction rate of 94% was achieved in organized crime matters against a target of 90%. A conviction rate of 73% was achieved in respect of sexual offences against a target of 69%. A conviction rate of 80% was achieved in respect of trio crimes against a target of 85%. Chairperson, we did not do as well as we would have liked in respect of this particular target. This is largely due to investigations not having been concluded in many instances and the identity of perpetrators being unknown. Notwithstanding our non-achievement, the regions made a positive impact in combating trio crimes. The total of 419 convictions, in fact, relate to 495 counts, comprising of 258 counts of house robberies, 129 counts of business robberies, and 108 counts of vehicle robberies, commonly referred to, of course, as hijacks. Chairperson, further analysis revealed that of the trio crimes, the highest conviction rate was achieved in respect of house robberies at 82.4%, whilst the lowest conviction rate was achieved in respect of vehicle robberies at 78.3%. A conviction rate of 57% was achieved against a target of 74% in respect of violent protest and industrial actions. Again, Chairperson, we did not do as well as we should have or as we would have liked, but these matters are somewhat intricate in nature and have inherent challenges as witnesses are reluctant to testify, the identification of perpetrators and the notable significant discrepancies between witnesses' evidence remain massive challenges for us in proving the guilt of the accused beyond a reasonable doubt. The challenges of investigating these matters also remain. In this regard, training has been provided to the police units responsible for attending to riots and protest actions, and of course to members of the detective services. A conviction rate of 100% was achieved in respect of the number of persons convicted of corruption or offences related to corruption where the amount involved is more than 5 million rand. Chairperson, again, we did not achieve our target in respect of the number of government officials convicted for corruption or offences related to corruption, only successfully prosecuting 49 cases against a target of 53 cases. Several partly heard matters were not finalized, as opposed to what we had initially anticipated. A conviction rate of 98% was achieved in respect of cybercrime prosecution against a target of 74%. A conviction rate of 77% was achieved in respect of matters that are reported to the Thuthuzela Care Center against a target of 68%. The NPA continued to be represented at the Forum of Heads of Entities convened by the Director General of Justice and Constitutional Development to ensure effective delivery in the criminal justice system. We remain reliant on support and synergy from our stakeholders in the criminal justice system. We were represented at provincial efficiency enhancement committee meetings chaired by the respective judge presidents, and we continue to be represented annually at the national efficiency enhancement committee meeting chaired by the chief justice to inter alia improve on giving effect to the norms and standards as issued by the chief justice and to improve on challenges around case flow management. Chairperson, criminal practice directives for the regional courts issued by the Regional Court President's Forum have come into effect from 1 September 2017. We welcome these initiatives. These are in line with the norms and standards and aim to improve uniformity, promote best practices, improve the efficiency and effectiveness of courts and case flow management, and to eliminate unnecessary and unreasonable delays in court proceedings. Chairperson, my concerns around the application of the policy directive on section 105 A of the Criminal Procedure Act plea and sentence agreement has resulted in the establishment of a task team to advise me on further enhancing the checks and balances created therein and placing greater responsibilities on deputy directors of public prosecutions, directors of public prosecutions, and even deputy national directors of public prosecutions. We're optimistic that further progress will be reported here on when we next appear before this committee during the middle of October this year. In respect of the accountability structure, the final touches are being put in place as envisaged in Section 22, Subsection 5 of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. I expect the final submission to be made to me on or before the 15th of September, which will place me in a position to report back to this committee when we appear before this committee again in October. Chairperson, I have further constituted a team to revisit the policy directive on alternative dispute resolution mechanisms to further enhance uniformity in its application. I'd like to go on and speak a bit about the asset forfeiture unit. The asset forfeiture unit achieved a rate of 50%, having reported on 8 targets and only achieving in respect of 4 of these targets. The percentage of completed forfeiture cases was 153% against a target of 96%. The value of completed forfeiture cases was 120.1 million against a target of 120 million. The percentage of freezing orders were 120% against a target of 100%. A success rate of 99% was achieved in respect of matters litigated in by the asset forfeiture unit against a target of 93%. The ASFU did not achieve its targets in relation to the value of freezing orders, only attaining 167.9 million against a target of 600 million. I've specifically brought Advocate Knox Molele along to explain the lack of achievement in respect of the various non-performance. We did say we'll take this committee into our confidence and report frankly in respect of our achievements and non-achievements. The AFU also did not achieve its targets in respect of the value of freezing orders obtained relating to corruption, where the amount involved is more than 5 million rand. The target in respect of the value of recoveries in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act was also not achieved, only recovering 26.8 million against a target of 60 million. Similarly, Chairperson, the AFU also failed to achieve its target in respect of the value of recoveries related to corruption, where the amount involved is more than 5 million, specifically relating to the proceeds of crime and government loss. Chairperson, the Office for Witness Protection achieved in respect of both its targets. No witnesses or related persons were harmed, threatened or killed whilst on the witness protection program. Only one witness out of 486 persons presently in the care of the Office for Witness Protection walked off the witness protection program, which is 0.2% against a target of 1.5%. Honourable Chairperson, the need for greater collaboration and cohesion between law enforcement authorities and communities in the fight against crime remains. In particular, the need to combat the use of drugs and drug trafficking, human trafficking, gangsterism, money laundering, illicit financial flows, corruption, the illegal possession of firearms, crimes against women and children, rape and murder. We remain committed to create more impactful cohesion and synergy with our stakeholders in this regard, in improving the lives of all. In this regard, numerous bilaterals have been had with various stakeholders. Memoranda of understandings have been signed in certain circumstances, and some draft memorandum of understandings are in the process of being concluded with other stakeholders. Of course, budget constraints remain a constant challenge for us. Ms. Van Zyl, Dr. Ramayiti, and Advocate Muzinyati may possibly talk more on that later on. There are, of course, some topical issues and cases that are, you know, in the public space. I deem it prudent to take this committee into confidence. There, of course, have been media reports where some, including some members of parliament, have asked, where is Sean Abrams? Where is the National Director of Public Prosecution? Firstly, on this score, not because I am silent, does that not mean that no work is being done? Secondly, in terms of the NPA Act and the Constitution, I'm obligated to report to this committee, to Parliament, and of course to the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, who enjoys final responsibility over the NPA. I am pleased to engage with the public on topical issues, and intend doing so after my appearance before this committee when I present the NPA's annual report in October, later this year. My media spokesperson and other members of the NPA delegated to do so also engage with the media and the public in given circumstances. Sean Abrams is not the only person in the NPA. There are many leaders in the NPA. Honourable Chairperson, some either willfully or naively have also attributed the powers of other institutions incorrectly to me or generally to the NPA. We have tried to remedy this position through various engagements, time and time again, without much success. I briefly want to speak about this. Section 205, subsection 3 of the Constitution, inter alia, reads, open quote, the objects of the police service are to prevent, combat, and investigate crime. My emphasis being on the investigation of crime. To maintain public order, to protect and secure the inhabitants of the Republic and their property, and to uphold and enforce the law, close quote. The preamble to the South African Police Service Act calls for the need of a director dedicated to the prevention, investigation, and combating of national priority offences, in particular serious organised crime and transnational crime, serious commercial and serious corruption. This, of course, has resulted in the creation of the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, also known as the HAWCS. Section 17, capital F, subsection 4 of the SAPS Act obligates the National Director to ensure that a dedicated component of prosecutors are available to assist and cooperate with members of the HAWCS in their investigations. This we have done, and we continue to do. Section 17, capital D, subsection 3 of the SAPS Act enjoins the national head of the HAWCS where he or she suspects that a national priority offence has been or is being committed, may request the National Director to exercise the powers of Section 28 of the National Prosecuting Authority Act. In other words, the head of the HAWCS could, under these circumstances, request the National Director of Public Prosecutions to appoint a Director of Public Prosecution or a Special Director of Public Prosecutions as an investigating directorate, who would enjoy investigative powers. No such requests have been made to me to date in respect of any matter. Section 41, subsection F and E of the Constitution respectively obligates spheres of government and organs of state not to assume any power or function except those conferred on them in terms of the Constitution, and to respect the constitutional status, institutions, powers, and functions of government in the other spheres. Section 179 of the Constitution provides for a single national prosecuting authority in this country with the power to institute criminal proceedings on behalf of the state and to carry any necessary function incidental to the institution of criminal proceedings. This, of course, includes providing guidance to the investigating authorities who are constitutionally mandated to conduct same. As an aside, Section 179 of the Constitution does not read there is a single national prosecuting authority and AfriForum. It does not provide for a parallel structure. Honourable Chairperson, I briefly want to speak on the on the state of the state of capture report. As you recall, the public protector, Advocate Busisiwe Mkabane, referred the state of capture report of Advocate Thuli Madonsela to both my office and the head of the Hawks. I subsequently constituted a team of experienced prosecutors under the leadership of the head of the SCCU to provide the requisite guidance to the Hawks investigators. A team of asset forfeiture specialists were further added under the leadership of the head of the operations of the asset forfeiture unit. An analysis of the state of capture report, of course, warranted criminal investigation, hence the appointment of a team of prosecutors to provide the guidance to the Hawks investigators. I deem it absolutely prudent to add that the NPA is unable to make any pronouncements on the merits of the matter until the investigations are concluded. The investigations were divided into seven legs. If memory serves me correct, when I appeared before SCOPA in May this year, I spoke of six legs, and I broke them down. Of course, there are now seven legs, and an eighth leg has also come to the fore, which I'll speak on as I continue. The first leg is, of course, what we refer to as the mentor investigation. The second leg is the Jonas investigation. The third leg is the Government Communications Information System and the New Age investigation. The fourth leg relates to the allegations of Eskom and Tegeta. The fifth leg relates to the allegations in respect of Transnet and Trillium. The sixth leg relates to the allegations in respect of the NAL and the VR laser investigation. The seventh leg relates to charges laid by Colin Mahine in Rosebank. Of course, Advocate Governor will speak a bit about that later on. She'll just clarify, you know, what that matter relates to. The furore around the leaked emails are part of these investigations. Numerous engagements have taken place between the NPA prosecutors and the Hawks investigators. Investigations are ongoing. The allegations in respect of the Estina farm in the Free State has become the eighth leg of the investigation. There are a team of prosecutors an asset forfeiture specialist working on this matter too. Again, I am not here to pronounce on the guilt or innocence of any person purportedly implicated in these investigations. I can, however, assure this committee that work is being done as we speak on these matters. At this stage, I also cannot comment on whether anyone will be charged or not. That is for the decision makers when investigations have been concluded. I also cannot tell you whether there will be any asset forfeiture applications, and if so, when they will take place. Publicly disclosing this in itself is undesirable and creates challenges in ex parte applications. And of course, will cause unnecessary time delays. not in the interest of justice to publicly announce these and what we are doing. I briefly also want to speak about the Marikana matter. After the release of the Falun Commission of Inquiry report, I appointed a team of prosecutors under the leadership of the head of the Priority Crime Litigation Unit in my office. The unit was required to provide the requisite guidance to the IPED investigators. Their responsibility was to assist these IPED investigators in matters where members of the South African police services were potentially implicated. Different legs were identified in respect of the events of the 12th leading up to and including the 16th of October, of August 2012. Announcement in respect of decision around the events of the 12th of August are expected to be made in the coming weeks as investigations have been concluded in that regard. Although IPED publicly announced that it referred the docket in respect of the events of the 16th to the NPA and that investigations have been concluded, this is in fact not the case. The docket was received, that is correct, but investigations are not concluded. Critically, the scene is yet to be reconstructed in respect to this matter, and there are some other investigations that are required to be conducted. Hence, the investigations are not concluded. I speak under correction. I learned yesterday that AMCO or NUM have requested permission to march to the NPA offices next week. My colleague whispers in my ear, it's AMCO. So yesterday I learned that AMCO have requested permission to march upon the NPA offices next week on a day that I regrettably will not be present at the office, after which they intend to hand over a memorandum for my attention. I'm happy to engage constructively and meaningfully with the leadership of AMCO on the topical issues they would like to raise. Of course, it's their right, you know, to embark upon a march, but I'm happy to engage with them and give them an ear. They must just reach out to me. I also want to speak a bit about the Grace Mugabe issue. Contrary to media reports, I did not have any meetings with Mrs. Mugabe's lawyers and the National Commissioner of Police. I was never in such a meeting. In fact, after this became public, and this became public as a result of a statement made by the acting National Commissioner of Police while I was in Parliament that was completely distorted, I spoke to the acting National Commissioner immediately thereafter, and I said, Commissioner, did you make such a statement? He said, no, I did not. It was taken out of context. In fact, you were never in such a meeting. So I can tell the public and this committee that I've never had a meeting with Mrs. Mugabe's lawyers. I did not know who her lawyers were then, and I do not know who Mrs. Mugabe's lawyers are now. The matter was never settled with the NPA, nor with me. This was the subject of a police investigation when Mrs. Mugabe invoked diplomatic immunity, which was subsequently granted by the Minister of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation in terms of Section 7, Subsection 2 of the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act. The NPA was never in the picture and is still not in the picture. with the exception of the Democratic Alliance, having cited me as a respondent in their review application, but not the National Commission of the Police. I think it's also prudent for me to speak on the allegations of selective prosecution. This allegation or notion is entirely misplaced. Decisions are made in the jurisdiction of directors of public prosecution's offices. They are made in the provinces and not by me or deputy national directors of public prosecution. These decisions are made in the regions on a daily basis. In fact, they are being made as we speak. If I'm appearing before this committee, who is making the prosecutorial decisions in the various courts, in the jurisdictions throughout the various provinces, and in the country? I do not make those decisions, nor do the two gentlemen next to me, nor do my other two deputy nationals that are back in Pretoria. I do not ordinarily make prosecutorial decisions, nor do my deputies. Although I have the power to do so, I use my powers of review as enshrined in the Constitution and the NPA Act, nor do I influence any decisions that are made. I am, however, briefed on many high-profile and contentious matters. There is nothing wrong with that. The law enjoins me to call for such briefings. That does not mean I have taken the decision to prosecute or not to prosecute, nor does it mean that I have influenced the decision to prosecute or to decline to prosecute. This incorrect narrative must change. Honourable Chairperson, I would like to thank this committee for its guidance and its support in the execution of its oversight responsibilities whenever we appear before this committee. As usual, I and my team always look favourably to engage constructively with this committee, in fact with every member of this committee. Such engagements provide a solid foundation for a more efficient criminal justice system to improve the lives of all our people in making South Africa a safer place for all. I'd like Advocate Molele to briefly just explain the challenges around the asset forfeiture unit. Immediately after him, I would like Ms. Van Zyl to speak about our budgetary issues and the challenge associated with that. I'd like Dr. Ramayuti to come in, if he deems it necessary, after Ms. Van Zyl has spoken. And if there are any other issues that need clarification on the presentation, I'm happy if Ms. Beloy will clarify issues that I omitted to touch on. Let me thank you once again, Honourable Chairperson, and members of this committee.
Advocate Abrahams, thank you for the input, and in particular, thank you for dealing with the topical issues before the nation, and there's no better forum than this one to deal with those issues. Thank you very much. And Advocate Molele.
Thank you, Chair. Chair and honourable members, it would appear that the current position relating to the AFU performance is not as well as it ought to have been. But perhaps it's quite important to contextualise some of the specific aspects and also to highlight the challenges and also, more importantly, how we are dealing with the challenges. Let me start by perhaps dealing with the red areas where we appear not to have performed well. I will start with the value of the freezing orders. By way of brief background, the asset forfeiture unit derives the bulk of its value cases from the ACTT, that is the anti-corruption task team. This is a location where most of your high value complex cases are indeed investigated. During the period under review, we had indeed identified and prioritized certain cases that we are quite confident that will assist us in reaching the target. However, the delay occasioned by the finalization of certain aspects of the investigations, including the asset forfeiture investigation, by and large led to us not achieving the target at the time of reporting. I can, however, confirm that we have since commenced our roadshows together with our partners at the ACTT to assist the regions in dealing with the challenges and blockages and ensuring that matters are speedily finalized so that in turn we will then recover from that. I can safely say that subsequent to the reporting, we have matters that will be enrolled in court to ensure that we are up to speed insofar as our value target. This then talks to the number of freezing orders. Now, having said that, if one takes regard to the fact that on the number of actual cases, we did in fact meet our target, we want to highlight the fact that part of those cases involve cases that were handled in terms of Chapter 6 of our processes, and they highlight and they relate to specific focus areas, and these are impact cases. The National Director mentioned the trio crimes, talking about hijackings, illicit mining, and on those cases where we achieved the numbers addressing a variety of focus areas, including your drugs and all that. So the failure to achieve in that in the values should be seen in the context of some impact being made in other focus areas. I digress to point out perhaps that value is not always necessarily the only way of reflecting the emphasis on making an impact on crime. Insofar as the recoveries, again one will note that insofar as the completed forfeitures, we did in fact achieve our target in terms of the number of cases. Now, the failure to meet our target on the recoveries, I might point out that subsequent to the completion of a case, there are certain administrative processes that must take place. In other words, once we get a forfeiture or confiscation order, the curator or the process relating to the disposal of the assets and paying the money into the criminal asset recovery account must commence. Now, there are delays inherent within that process. Amongst others, if I may point out, a curator is required to take his report and account to the Master of the High Court to make sure that he is properly accounted for the estate and all that. Now, that milestone of recovery simply means that the money is not yet in the bag. While the case is indeed completed and the assets have been disposed of, the actual process of ensuring that the money has been properly accounted for before it's in the bag is not complete. That, at times, in many instances, is inherent. So, therefore, I think one can take comfort in the fact that the number of cases has indeed been completed. It may well be, and it's a matter of time before the money is in the bank. And there are all those cases that we identified, and this is one of the major reasons why we have fallen short of our target in that space. In the next quarter, the target will be looking much, much better. Now, I want to talk about, as I mentioned before, the value of recoveries relating to corruption. You will note, and my colleague is going to present, that indeed there's been a number of finalized cases involving corruption. Now, at a glance, you look at the number, it may not necessarily correspond to the value that asset forfeiture has recovered. In many instances, the number that SSU will be sitting with involve your middle-level, medium-sized cases in terms of complexity that are finalized, which are not necessarily of great value. We do have a number of cases in excess of a billion where we are hoping to recover this year. Now, this leads to your high complex cases that have been litigated in the anti-corruption space. I might digress, point out that in the last financial year, we finalized two major cases, The investigation relating to those cases commenced in 2009. We were only able to realize the actual payment of the funds last year. Now, this partly talks to, it highlights the one point, the fact that the reality is some of these complex cases at corruption, at anti-corruption, takes quite some time to finalize. Having said that, I think the point to make is there are indeed matters that we have prioritized. As I mentioned earlier, we have commenced a roadshow with our colleagues in the with the DPCI to identify whatever blockages in the finalization and indeed of the criminal investigations and the prosecution to ensure the smooth flow of cases. So, in their conclusion, so one might say, yes, indeed, the reflection presented by AFU in terms of its performance, it is worrying. I wish to state the following. One is comforted by the fact that there's a solid action plan that is in place. The challenges that have been flagged out are not insurmountable. We are indeed dealing with this. The coordination is gradually improving with our counterparts, and I think the second quarter will certainly be looking much more different than what we're sitting in now. Thank you, Chair.
Mevrouw Van Zyl wil die comité toespreek.
Bye, dankie, Chair. Thank you. I'll quickly take you through our budget for the first quarter. It's part of the presentation pack. The first slide is just the overall of the NPA, where we were at the end of quarter one, the 30th of June. Here you will see that we've overall spent 25.72% of our total allocated budget, which is 0.72% more than the linear spending of 25% at the end of the quarter. We are facing, as already mentioned, a big budget constraints in our compensation of employees. This was also highlighted in our previous meeting we had here. And this is just the first quarter proving that we're continuing with those concerns. Our spending on goods and service, that's our operational budget, is also high. That's standing on 28.96%. But this was due to big invoices that we've paid in the first quarter of the financial year. So that this was part of our projection. The remainder of the year, we will be able to stay on par. The next slide is the breakdown of our 25.72 budget spend for the four sub-programs. Here you can see our big concern is in our office for witness protection, where we stand at 29.96%. Now, in witness protection sub-program, we don't have the budget pressure on personnel specifically, but this one more relates to the high expenditure of our witnesses. The next fourth slide is just a detailed system program for economic classification, but I think that one you can browse through on your own, except if there's any questions on them. So I would like to go to the slide on our cost pressure and our unfunded priorities. In this slide, if we look at our spending on our personnel, if we linear project this going forward, we're facing a 71 million shortfall on our personnel. This we have communicated at numerous forums with the Department of Justice, at National Treasury, at the NCEC hearing. But the feedback that we got is there's no additional funding to be allocated to the NPA, but National Treasury gave us the approval to environment some of our operational budgets to our personnel. We are only in a position to environment 57 million to cater now for the warm bodies. That 57 million will have an impact on our operational budget, and there's the areas that will be affected. We're taking 50 million from our machinery and equipment. Here we will have to do forced savings and not buying anything new. We are forced saving 50 million on our travelling and subsistence, 12 million on property payments, 10 million on consumables, and 5 million on our communication. So the 57 million environment will bring relief to our personnel budget, but the MPA is not able to sustain the environment from operational budget to compensation every year because we don't have the budget in operational budget anymore. The next slide is our unfunded priorities. Now, with the 71 projected shortfall, we can't do anything. We've got critical posts that we can't fill. We've got our aspirant training program that has been suspended now for 2 years that we can't continue with. But in this slide, we highlight the critical posts, the costing of the aspirants, and then the funding for presidential appointments that's needed in the MPA. The next slide is just a detailed costing of the unfunded priorities going forward over the MTS period. This is also the slide that was presented to National Treasury and the MTEC and the Department of Justice. This is what we need to sustain the MPA. The challenges on our compensation budget is that we have lost during the 2015-16 financial, during the 2016-17 financial year, 156 officials in the NPA. And in the current financial year, we've already lost 55 officials. With this, we're not appointing any new people, and we're not able to sustain the NPA due to the growth, also the requirement of our services. The next one is our aspirant prosecutor program is bringing in new prosecutors from the bottom up, training them through the NPA. So we can't sustain the NPA without our aspirant program. And then the DPSA is currently looking at a tool for the early retirement package, which will bring relief in the outer year, because our 71 million in the current year grows to 200 million for the next year and 220 in the outer financial year. So our problem on compensation will just grow bigger. The next slide is only highlighting the impact of this reduction in our personnel budget. And here you can see that our backlog cases will increase. We've got absenteeism due to the pressure of our existing staff. Our employee wellness program is becoming overloaded due to all the problems our prosecutors are facing in the court. And then the last one is the threat of the witnesses due to the reduction of our protection services. The next slide is just a little bit more details on the people that lead the MPA. From April 2017, you can see per month the change in our personnel numbers. So during July, we've lost 13 people in the MPA. Of the average people that leave the MPA due to normal attrition rates, 60% of the people that we lose relates to our prosecutors, 20% is advocates, and 20% is management and administration. The next slide is just a projection, but this I've already mentioned is the 71 million I've spoken about for the anticipated shortfall for the current year, and this is just showing the projection for going forward, the 200 and the 223 million going forward. Then there's a slide on the details of our aspirants, the costing of our aspirants, and then the last slide is in order to ensure that we remain within our budget, as we've implemented interventions to ensure that. And there, I've listed them. The first two I've already mentioned, the non-filling of our posts and the aspirant program. Then we're looking at our travel and subsistence, our catering. We're looking at our fleet. We're looking at all our long-term contracts. We're looking at new contracts and the bouquet of services. We're limiting everything only to what the necessities and cutting out everything that we can live without. And then we're also currently reviewing all our IT services and contracts to ensure that we can free up money in our operational budget to pay for the warm bodies in the NPA. And that's the end of the budget. I don't...
Dr. Ramaide to sit.
I think, Chairperson, just before Dr. Ramaide sweeps, you know, people leave the institution for a number of different reasons. They're either fired, which means they're dismissed. They resign, because they have found greener pastures, if they believe them to be greener pastures, or there's disciplinary action instituted against them, and to avoid that from proceeding, they resign, or people retire early, or people pass on, people die. So there's a number of different reasons, you know, why people leave the institution. The aspirant prosecutor program is something that we cannot hold off any longer. We've gone to the extent where we need to sustain the institution. So we have put together a structure that will be called something in line of the NPA Training Academy, which will incorporate training for prosecutors and for administrators alike. We've already appointed somebody to head that structure. We're targeting the new intake for the aspirant prosecutors program for April next year. If we don't do that, we won't be able to sustain the institution going forward. So we need resources for this. With regards to the issue of the non-filling of vacant posts, we're sitting in a situation where there are 45 critical posts that we have to fill now as a matter of urgency. As a second phase to that, there's another 112 posts that we've got to have those posts advertised within the next few weeks. We need the money for these positions. If we don't get this money, we'll be placed in a dire situation. On that score, I will then request, with your leave, Honourable Chairperson, for Dr. Ramaide to sweep.
I wish I could do that successfully, Chairperson, because the situation is really dire, and I think he has mentioned it. But I just want to emphasize the cost and funding pressures that we have, and just to emphasize the dire situation we are in, or we're soon going to find ourselves as a state institution, as a prosecuting institution. I think she has mentioned the projected overspending in respect of our personnel budget. And now here we're talking about our personnel budget. In other words, paying the people that we currently have on the system who are doing the actual prosecutions. We are projecting a shortage of about 71 million rands. That's from our personnel budget. Now, we have pleaded with Treasury. They have allowed us to do a varament of 52 million rand from our goods and services. Now, remember that we're taking away from our goods and services, which is supposed to actually support the very same people who are providing the service. Well, that's good. That's good for now. But despite that, in terms of the projection, we're still running short by about 14 million rand. Now, that's not the end of it. We now then have unfunded priorities. And the critical ones, Limpopo, for example, there's already a need to have people there because the court is up and running and we don't have the additional funding. Now for that we need something like I think it's about that's for both DPP Polokwane and Mpumalanga. We need about 35.8 million rands. That over and above the projected shortfall that we have. And now, beyond that, there are these critical posts that he has mentioned, starting with the 45 that have already been advertised. Interviews have been done, selections have been made, recommendations have been made, but we don't have the money to get those people on board. So that's how dire the situation is. And there are other pressures. For example, there are posts of special directors and DPPs that the NDPP needs to be filled in. You mentioned, for example, the possibility of appointing investigating directors. I foresee that in the near future we're going to need those investigating director positions filled. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to do the work that we need to do. So that's how dire the situation is. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Open
the floor for the honourable members to put questions. Honourable members.
Thank you so much, Chair. Well, I don't know why members felt hesitant to take questions, but perhaps it's because they're still reflecting on the presentation. Well, let me risk it to be the first to raise a few questions with the hope that I would be given a second bite later. As let us settle. Look, it's good that we've got this presentation. We've been waiting for it. Notwithstanding a separate request which was made by Honorable Freidenberg to have a separate engagement with the Director of Public Prosecution earlier to answer to some of the questions we felt were pressing. But we welcome, of course, this presentation as part of the routine work of Parliament. Various cases, well, the committee has been updated on various cases that the NPA is seized with. I'm pleased that the case regarding the dairy farm in the Free State, my home province, is somehow receiving some attention. And the culprits, whoever comes, the culprits will have that day in court. And the NPA will help us to retrieve whatever that the public has lost in the form of a generous donation that was made to the Gupta family special wedding. 30 million is too much, given a country where close to about 17 million citizens live below red line, live below poverty line. They can hardly fork for a living. They live for less than 450 per month, less than 16 rand a day. And yet we're able to give, in the form of a generous donation, 30 million to a foreign couple, for that matter. So I think it must be attended to, and we hope that the NPA will do just what it's supposed to do. Secondly, there's been a widely reported matter of the former acting commissioner of the police, Mr. Pashani, a matter which has been raised by IPET about alleged fraud and corruption allegations as a result of taking bribes and all of that. And according to media reports, IPET's sent his report to the Office of the Director of National Prosecution 3 months ago, and the matter has not received attention. And specifically, the application or the content of the application which IPED alleged to have made is about a need to seize assets which, according to IPED, are proceeds of corruption and fraud. These are proceeds of crime. I want to know why it took so long for the office to identify that there's some missing or outstanding information in the application, and how does the office hope to remove profit from proceeds of crime? Because you are stating as your strategic objective one, strategic objective two rather, which reads, I quote, ensure that profit is removed from crime. How do you hope to remove profit from crime when you are hesitant to act on such widely reported acts of corruption and fraud? Why it took you so long? Or don't you think that perhaps all what is alleged by IPED are proceeds of crime? And if these are not proceeds of crime, justify your hesitance to act and to seize whatever is accrued as a result of proceeds of crime. Look, Honorable Chair, we've got a good orator in the person of the Director of Public Prosecution, Advocate Sean Abraham. In him we've got a man I think we must treat with a measure of respect. But we have a man who sits comfortably in his office, who now in his presentation sounds angelic about measures he intends to put in place to deal with evils of malfeasance. I must repeat that he sounds very much angelic about measures he wants to put in place to deal with evils of malfeasance, of corruption, looting of public resources, and state capture. And so far, and to this very day, nothing has come forth out of measures that he announced on his very first press briefing upon his appointment. We're sitting here wondering, do we have a Director of Public Prosecution? Or we only have it in name? What remains of it is a shadow of its former self. I sit here asking whether his loyalty is with the principle that underpins the act that appoints. Can I be protected to make my point? The Honourable Member was hesitant to raise his hand to ask a question.
Point of order.
This is my time, I must be allowed to speak.
Mateus, I don't want to interrupt you.
Point of
order. I want to, even before I accept that, I want to appeal that we must not be judgmental. I have opened for the floor for honorable members to open questions. Language like hesitance or orator angelic are judgmental. Put questions and then on the basis of the answers come to conclusions. But if we are going to come to conclusions before the answers are given, it means we are not fair. Honorable Mulwani?
I just want to appeal to colleagues. These are civil servants, respectable civil servants. If we get members of parliament attacking civil servants, I don't think it's a very good reflection of what we need to do. And I think that with due respect, Mr. Mateus, you may have your opinion about the Director of Public Prosecution, but I think that we cannot do that publicly. I think you need to say, perhaps I'm not satisfied with A, B, C, and D.
At the same time, I agree with you. All that we are dealing with is a factual situation. So let's put questions
on the facts presented and await answers and not be judgmental. I'm not going to allow judgments. Honorable Matthijs, proceed.
Well, Honorable Chair, perhaps I must remind
you. We shouldn't be casting aspersions. We should be asking for answers.
I must remind the Honorable Bumlo. Look, in my language, there's an idiom that says, Oscar Rudan Chelebi. Never think of teaching an ostrich to run because he'll run faster than you. What I'm doing is because of the teaching that I got from them in how they dealt with the former public protector and on a range of other issues. So they shouldn't come here and behave angelic.
Respect Honorable Matthijs, we are dealing with matters of public interest. The public is not interested in the little squabbles between members of parliament. They want the NPA to account on the work that they are doing, and these are factual issues. Let's accord them the opportunity to provide answers to matters that the public wants to hear.
Now, my last question is, as a continuation of the point I was about to make and I was disturbed, is the office and particularly Advocate Sean loyal to the principle that underpins the office and the oath that he took of office, or is loyal and obedient to the principal who appointed him? Hence, there are no charges that he prefers against the sitting president, when evidence is overwhelming that the president should be having his day in court. Is he loyal to the principles and the ethics of profession that he took, or is loyal to his principal?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be objective and not subjective in my comments. Chairperson, let me start by thanking NPA for the presentation and start with the first issue of vacant and critical positions. Chairperson and honorable members, I propose that we sort of intervene in this regard and assist NPA in finding a solution. Let's find a mechanism of interacting with the National Treasurer to assist NPA to ensure that, especially as it affects rural provinces, mostly Mpumalanga and Limpopo, the newly built high courts, I think. So, because rural people, like urban people, deserve the best. They should enjoy the fruits of this freedom, Chairperson. So I humbly plead with Chairperson and honorable members to assist NPA when coming to the last issue of vacancies and critical positions. And then again, let me follow you, Chairperson, in thanking NDPP for addressing very topical issues which are in the public domain. The issues which he raised, although they don't fall in the period under review which they are reporting, they came after June 2017, but thank you for them to touch on those very, very contentious issues, topical issues. At least the public now, at least have a view of what is transpiring, how far is NPA with whatever is in the public domain, state capture and so forth. You made mention about 8 lakes, which at least even me personally, I feel very much privileged to have that information. And then on the issue of financials, CFO, I'm very much concerned about slides on households and OWP overspending of more than 9%. You are aware that in terms of NT nonsense standard, should be regulations, it should be at least 25% per quarter. But was it really for money, that 9% overspending on households and on Office of Witness Protection, OWP, more than 5%? Because anything 4.9 is tantamount to the nearest 5%, Dr. Ramayide, the chairperson. So may you shed light on that? And on your cost pressures, the forced savings, are they not going to have a negative impact on affected programs? Are they not going to have that? Because if you take from that, you took 51 million through Viamet to COE, compensation on employees. That's in their position. You said we should speak language which the public understands. I got it. So, compensation of employees. I agree we should abide by your instructions. I hear my colleague here saying, an exclamation. We should, yes. Yes. So, is this 51 million not going to have a very, very negative impact on service delivery of the affected programs? And again, that shortfall, chairperson, of 71 million is a very, very serious concern for me. That's why I think, because this is a constitutional body which is supposed to ensure that part of law enforcement agencies, to ensure that we, in terms of our national development plan, we are and we feel safe in South Africa. So let's find a mechanism to assist. We don't want to see them fail and please those who want them fail. We must ensure NPA succeed in fighting crime. And again, can they kindly share, I want to congratulate them on the cyber crime prosecution, but may you elaborate more. What was it that you were prosecuting on this cyber crime? Because I could see you did excellently well. As much as this committee, we are still busy on the cyber crime and cyber security bill, but at least you are a bit advanced. So just share light with us, which specifically, which crimes are you prosecuting in terms of this cyber crime? And on the Dr. Grace Mugabe's case, I'm afraid to comment because I may dwell on the merits of the case, more especially that the DA has cited you as cited NDPP as a respondent in this case. So it's just unfortunate. As much as South Africans, we don't condone ill treatment of women or little girls, but through your, may I be protected, Chairperson? I could hear a male voice. I think it's one, because I know he's yes. So it's sort of intimidating me. Okay. Thank you for the protection, Chairperson. So I think constitutionally and in terms of National Prosecution Act, please do your NPA should be left to do their work without fear and favor or prejudice. So continue doing that. And again, the issue statement issued by the acting police commissioner, Lesiba Mutiba, at the beginning, yes, because it was one-sided. I personally became very much worried and wondered if really the NDPP could do that. But we are aware that rules of natural justice should always be adhered to. You must always hear both sides of the coin. Chairperson warned me yesterday not to use this Latin word. Hear both sides of the coin. So at least you clarify the issue of saying, no, you were never part of that. And as National Commissioner Mutiba has also said that, he never said that, but I was a bit surprised. So on COE, on compensation, on employees, the past year and this year, subject to correction, you said we have lost 155 plus 57, which in numbers then it will be 212. Okay. So, Chairperson, intervention is required.
I really share your concern about the shortfall. We can't say on the one hand they must perform optimally and then not provide the resources. We'll make a special note of that. Thanks, Honorable Mutago. Honorable Breitenbach, and I noted you, Honorable Bongo.
Thank you.
Honorable Hon, Honorable Bongo, in that order, and then Honorable Majaki.
You're done? In March 2014, the leader of the Democratic Alliance laid a charged with the police in Kandla, dealing with the Kandla matter. The docket is in Kandla CIS 123/3/2014. The Minister of Police in a parliamentary question told us that the docket had been handed to yourself on the 21st of August 2015. In March 2017, the Minister of Justice said, in reply to a parliamentary question, that the matter was still under consideration by the PCLU. You subsequently had correspondence, I think, between yourself and Advocate Govender with our attorneys. Could you please tell me what the current status of that matter is and what the reason is for the delay? I'm interested to know that you've spent a lot of time, money and effort on the electronic case management system. It's been literally years, possibly a decade. What is the status of that particular program? How many cases have been dealt with in that fashion? How many cases have been dealt with in court in that fashion and successfully? I see you mentioned the difficulties with Polokwane and Mpumalanga High Court. What is the position? I understand that there's a funding issue, but what is the position? Are they up and running? Are they fully functional? Are they staffed? A lot of time, money and effort went into that project. We need to know what the actual position is there. You've mentioned in your report that the cost of curators regarding to the asset forfeiture unit, and perhaps Mr. Mulele can answer the question, if that's okay. The cost of curators used by AFU is significant, and that a task team has been established to bring these costs down.
I'm interested to know the status of that task team. Has it made any progress? How do you propose to bring these costs down? And what precisely is it doing? And of whom is the task team comprised? The offices of the DPP in Pretoria were broken into some time ago. And apparently two laptops were stolen. How was access gained to this, the building? What is the current progress of that issue? Has somebody been arrested? And similarly, there was a break-in at the Pretoria Magistrates Court, where the office of the Chief Prosecutor was targeted. Now, anyone who's ever been to that building knows that it's alive with CCTV cameras, and I'm sure that there must have been footage. Has anyone been arrested in that matter? What was taken, and how do both of these break-ins affect cases that are currently being dealt with? There's also a mention of the implementation of an intra-agency strategy between SARS and the NPA. It was supposed to be implemented by June 2017. It also was supposed to include the FIC. Has progress been made with this particular issue, and if so, what is the progress? There was also mention made of a memorandum of understanding, we were told by the SIU earlier this year, between the NPA, the SIU, and the DPCR. How far is this? Has it been finalized? What precisely does it cover? What can we look forward to in this regard? The life issue, the meaning matter, remains an issue of huge concern for everybody, I'm sure for yourselves as well. Is there a criminal investigation in that regard? If so, what is the progress? Where is it being dealt with? And can we look forward to prosecutions? And the same question applies to the Prosser matter. I'm also interested to know what the position is with regards to the investigation into the activities of the former acting IPED executive director, Mr. Khamanyane. Where precisely is that matter, and is there any progress? In the press, Mr. McBride, the current head of IPED, has complained about the matter involving Major General Mabula. He says that the matter was decided in 2010, suspects were arrested, the cases were withdrawn so that the matter could be centralized. Is that correct? And if so, why have they not yet been placed on the roll? Contact Fabius to centralize. I'm also interested to know what the progress is in the matter of the case being dealt with regards to Mr. Flock Symington, and whether that is one of the matters that were affected by the break-in. I have many more questions, Mr. Chair, but I will give my colleagues an opportunity. No, I'm perfectly capable of forwarding them myself. Thank you. That's what I wanted to do. They're here to report, and let them report. Thank you.
Hold on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe as a start, I would like to inquire from the National Director whether he took a front of being referred to as an angelic. Yes. No, in all seriousness, Chair, I want to... No, I said I think the national director must inform us whether he took affront to being referred to as looking angelic. But that, yeah. Chair...
Not at all.
I want to start off asking or addressing the NPA regarding the targets. And now those colleagues who were here when they presented their APP would remember that we at the time raised questions regarding the lowering of targets. And unfortunately today, if one now analyze the first quarter performance, we sit with a situation that that criticism of ours seems to be fair criticism, in the sense that in respect of the main targets on which they report, stuff like the conviction rates in the high courts up to the conviction rates in sexual offences, bar one or two, we now see that although the target is exceeded, we have a mirror situation to the actual performance in the last financial year. So first of all, it would seem then that it's unfair to say that there's been an improvement or an exceeding of targets, really. And then the question now is, shouldn't we, when we deal with the ABP of next year, again be more realistic? So if NPA can address us on that. But then, Chair, also talking about the performance report and specifically the issues of the underperformance in respect of the value of recoveries in terms of POCA and the freezing orders where there's more than 5 million rand involved. Unfortunately, I think we as a committee must recall that this has been an ongoing trend. That in many of these report back meetings, there's an underperformance, and then it's always said that performance will pick up in the next quarter or so. And that's a difficulty in the sense that even, well, we can have an argument whether that's a perception or not, but the reality is there's a whole lot massive information out there in South Africa regarding corruption at the moment, and when it goes towards trust by the public in the NPA, it must be questioned whether it's sufficient to say but we're confident this will pick up. And maybe, Chair, we as a committee must at some stage say that we need a briefing only in respect of the manner in which corruption and corruption-related cases are being dealt with, to also properly understand how we can from time to time and quite frequently be informed that, okay, we're not doing that well, but we're confident that this will pick up. For example, the Honourable Breitenberg referred to the PRASA matter. But as we sit here in July this year, the NPA informed the public that by the end of that month, a decision will be made known whether regarding the alleged corrupt contract there will be prosecution. And as we sit here, I'm not aware that such a decision was ever made known. Then, Chair, the other thing which I think we as a committee have picked up, and I certainly have addressed it with some of the other stakeholders, is the also in respect of reporting the whole issue of the functionality of our criminal justice system as a whole. Those colleagues who were here would recall that when the department came, it was asked regarding the situation of court hours, backlog cases. Previously we, for example, had very real information to say that in this division and that division, the case who's been on the court roll the longest is 800 and whatever days, 5,000 days or whatever, and this type of matters was then addressed to say this is what we're going to do to try and ultimately bring this to an end. But now this year when the department came, they said, no, we took it out because we're not in full control of what happens in the court. But we're sure the Office of the Chief Justice will come and report because they are sort of chairing these efficiency enhancement committees. Then when the Office of the Chief Justice came, they said, no, it's not part of our target because we're not in control of the situation as a whole. And obviously, looking at the presentation today, I think the NPA, they correct me if I'm wrong, is sort of the same stance. That we can't own backlogs and court hours because we're only one of the role players. The difficulty I think we sit now as Parliament is that when are we going to be put in possession of how efficient is our criminal justice system, purely focusing on court hours, backlog roles, and that type of thing. And they can answer to my statement, but my plea is also that between everybody who's involved in the Efficiency Enhancement Committee, ultimately some form of accountability measure to Parliament, to us, must be reintroduced, because it's not good enough for us not to have that information anymore. Then in respect of the vacant and critical positions, Chair, I must agree with you and the Honourable Mutapu. We've previously, and the BRRR process is coming up, advocated the position to say that prosecution services must be deemed a critical service and must be treated differently, even in the face of very bad economic situations. Ultimately, it will have a very negative impact on the country as a whole, and I repeat that. So even though we might have many issues with the NPA and so on, the principle is that this is a critical service, and I think we must already agree that we must look at this carefully when the BRRR hearings are conducted. Then, Chair, three other sticky issues. The NDPP has already referred to media reports and the possible inaccuracy of media reports. But earlier this year, we were first faced on a Sunday morning with a front page headline that the NPA is very skeptical and do not see any value in the so-called leaked mails. And then later on, it was denied. But it would be good on the record to just hear how they see the status of the leaked emails. I know he said it sort of overlaps all of the 7 or 8 different legs of the state of capture investigation. But it would be good to hear how they see what's the status, the relevance of these leaked emails. And then, Chair, previously when the NDPP appeared here, we asked him about the involvement of Ms. Jiba and Mr. Mkwebe. And he stated on the record that they are still on voluntary leave and that any information that they attend meetings at the NPA is incorrect. But now when the NDPP appeared at SCOPA, he indeed confirmed that they regularly attend meetings of the ACTT. That's also on the minutes of SCOPA. So I don't know whether that's also a misquote, but it would be good to get clarity on that. And lastly, Chair, in respect of the matter of Dr. Grace Mugabe, I've looked at the minutes, PNG minutes of the police committee, and what he said there is that the police commissioner indicated that he at least obtained an opinion from Mr. Abrams that Ms. Mugabe or Dr. Mugabe must go to court. That's what's on the record at the PNG. So I don't know from his presentation here today, I got the impression that he was wholly uninvolved in the matter, but maybe you can just clarify that for us. Thank you.
I think on the functionality of the criminal justice system, it's our responsibility to get the Department of Justice to account because it leads the implementation. function of the integrated justice system, not the office of the Chief Justice and the NPA. But thank you for raising that, that we can put that to them. Honorable Bongo, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, NTPP, for the presentation. I think what was an observation from the onset is that we are leading a solid team. That is why we are able to distribute the presentation across all the members of the management team, which is commendable. I think I should say this, that as Parliament and Committee, we don't take the work we're doing very light. We appreciate all the efforts that you put in the work that we're doing. And from the presentation itself, Chairperson, I think you are leading a stable institution. The institution is quite stable. However, I think we need to overemphasize on a few issues. I think the one raised by Honorable Mutapo, I hear Honorable Van is also supporting. I think as we go to the BRRR, we need to raise this matter very sharply as the committee chair, because the stability of the institution as it stands will not continue progressively if, you know, the program that we spoke about, the aspirant prosecutors program, has been stalled now for financial years. It's not working. So a normal organization that is running, if there is no input in terms of breathing the people who do the work, that may create an instability in the institution. Because on the other hand, you get others who are leaving the institution on the basis that they got better opportunities, others are dismissed, but you are not, the intake is a problem. So I think it must be a responsibility of us as Parliament to go to Parliament that the prosecution is very important, and you are required by the Constitution. Remember our last engagement, that we are expected to act without fear, favor, or prejudice. I think even Honorable Matthias is agreeing that that must be treated with respect, and it is what is currently happening. Now, the issue that we have raised around AMCO, and the AMCO having to come and do the protests in the offices, I think, my advice would be you need to an alternative way of dealing with it, because you know the people of this country are very sensitive about it. So if the people come and march there, it's like they may put some prejudice that you must do this in a fast way and make mistakes. It may affect the responsibility. So if you were to call them and have meaningful engagement with them on the issues that they are concerned about, the delays, if it's delays, whatever, so that, because when you watch TV these days, we're even afraid to watch TV, because you see things that makes you not to sleep at night, whether we're safe or not, and so on. So these matches may have to deal with it in an alternative dispute resolution way. That is an AMCO matter. And I think I also want to commend you on the issue of cybercrime, because on the cyber, there's a bill sitting with us in Parliament. We need to deal with that as quick as possible. If possible, we may also have your inputs on how to, as people who have an experience in terms of how to prosecute some of these issues, because the bill is with us now. And there are issues, you raised issues around the mining. I'm not sure what is this, what they call Zama Zama.
I'm interested to know the extent to which we're succeeding in prosecuting those issues, because on daily basis on TV you see, even yesterday I saw another Zamazama who was busy Zamazaming, and I'm told this matter is prevalent in the Gauteng area, Mpumalanga, and I think there are three provinces where it's very prevalent, and Free State, you see. So the extent. We have also raised the, last time we had engagement, we, Bishop Marikana came very, how far are we in terms, well, we also spoke about the issue of life as demand method. And my recommendation on all those issues that we may have raised, because the issues that we have raised, if we were to, chairperson, have them develop a dashboard exercise, because now we're dealing with the, we're dealing with the first quarter report, but there are issues that are topical that have been raised. We may need a dashboard exercise where those issues will be briefed separately to say, how far with this one, how far with this one, so that we're able to track them. But if we were to follow the Honorable Breitenberg's way, I don't think we'll win, because we'll end up listing all the million cases there and say, how far is this one, how far is this one. So we may have to separate those that are topical, that constitute what is in the public domain, and get briefings on maybe on a quarterly basis with how far this issue, so that the public and ourselves are also kept abreast on those issues. And then the other matter, you know, there is an issue about the leaks of the emails and so on, which you said they are cutting across the 8 layers. But I don't know, from a legal point of view and a constitutional point of view, what is the status of the leaks? If I leak things, because now it's getting a trend, a person just leak. You just leak these things and then you don't come to the authorities and give the authorities that here are the issues that must be dealt with, this is crime and so on. Because you start to leak, you start, the next thing you... We do that to other people, and this country is going to be run by leaks. I don't think I don't think from a legal point of view, because is it not a crime that you just leak things? If anyone in the country has an issue to raise with somebody, bring those things to the authorities, so that authorities can be seized formally with the work that is there, and we go and prosecute where we must prosecute. Because another matter which I wanted to comment on, which is, it also confuses the public, and some members I can also hear that they are not also getting clear, which you must clarify. When there is a case, what is the role of the police and the role of the prosecution, and when does the prosecution start? Because I hear some of the questions are issues that, from where I'm sitting, are police issues. But then the public will expect the prosecution to get in. So if we were to clarify that, even to the interest of Honorable President Beck herself, because I saw he was raising other issues of police and so on. So because once we mislead the public about what is the role of this one, and when does this role start, when does this one start, we're going to have a problem. And lastly, Chair, is the integrated. But I also take your tune that the Department of Justice must be seized with this matter. The integrated, because this integration is a very important, yeah, I think it's a cornerstone of the whole the justice general. So maybe if I were to take the tune from you, that let's take it to the Department of Justice so that we clarify all the rules and the role players and in that form. But from where I'm sitting, Chair, the institution is quite stable. I'm just happy with the manner we're running, but let's close those issues that we can be able to close. But I'm worried about the vacancy rate. But I think we must continue to up the game. Thank you very much.
We are going to have a situation where honorable members don't know what is the competence of the NPA and the competence of the police.
we'll have to run a workshop for them because we can't use this session to educate members of parliament on the competences of the different institutions. You are right, Honorable Bongo, because this may be misleading to the public. Honorable Kwame, you will come after Honorable Majaki.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me take the opportunity of welcoming the presentation from the National Prosecution Authority. And to also comment about the behavior of members when they actually make reflections on the members who occupy public offices. I don't think it's correct. We need to always try and become objective. Whatever arguments we put forward, if they are fair, they should actually be factual. You base everything on a fact so that we can properly assess you, which is part of what our responsibility is all about. I see that you have actually done very well when it comes to your targets, and we want to congratulate you for it. I hear other members saying you've lowered the targets, which then becomes a challenge for you moving forward in terms of determining targets. And how do you determine, what formula do you use? Should we expect that targets should actually increase like CPI annually? Because the argument that's been put forward is that it's like this year's targets are almost similar to last year's targets, and therefore when you're actually saying they have succeeded, it's because the targets were low. So I think the next time you come, also talk to us about the formula, so that we have a formula that allows us to have measurable indicators of success, so that when you present success to us, we don't criticize it. There will be facts that backs up the success that you'll be presenting before us. One thing that is a big challenge in South Africa is the level of crime. We come of crime that South Africa has got. We come from a weekend that had so many burglaries, including a burglary in the home of a minister. You can see that it's just fashionable for break-ins to take place. I don't know whether it's because people know that they cannot be successfully prosecuted. It's a challenge. This is just a comment to say that this is a challenge for us as South Africans. And it's not only a challenge for NPA, it's also a challenge for SAPS. Are they in the position to successfully apprehend these people? Because it's as if there's actually war against South Africans. And there are certain areas also that continues to be a challenge. You know, we've got drug addiction. And the level of drug addiction in this country is so high that we need to know as to whether whoever is peddling drugs in South Africa, are they being successfully prosecuted? Are they being apprehended? We need to get such reports so that we can see if ourselves, the South Africans, are managing to wage war against drugs and whether we are winning that war or we are actually getting drowned in the war against drugs. Otherwise, we're going to be left with no citizens for tomorrow, because if you look at the number of children that have been affected by drug addiction in South Africa, you'd realize that the problem is quite massive. Cable theft. For example, this morning on the news, there was a report that there's a scrapyard in Johannesburg. The owners thereof have been arrested. And they were found with cable worth something like 15 million. And you know, cable theft is something that takes place every weekend or every week. Yes. How are we doing in that area? We need to actually focus our attention on issues of that nature, so that at the end of the day, we don't actually start behaving in a way that takes you to the direction of the noise. Because, of course, as ourselves as politicians, we will develop interest sometimes in some of the areas that needs to be prosecuted, but that shouldn't take the attention of NPA from what needs to be done for the general citizens of South Africa. Because you're not only doing it to please us. We are doing it to ensure that all liberties that have been promised to South Africans are actually realized. Because if South Africans live in crime, it means they're still in bondage. They can only enjoy those liberties enshrined in the Constitution if we are in the position to actually successfully prosecute the people who are actually causing the crime in South Africa. Trafficking of women and children is still a big challenge. And while talking about that, I would actually say that the report doesn't talk to your successful prosecution on violence against women and children. In future, I would wish to actually see such statistics to be sure that we are actually also winning the war against violence on women and children, which is something that is so